For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson. With the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe, and with thanks to all those in Denver who've pushed the Mile High City to 20th high on our Views by City. Then, having invoked Monty Python a couple of weeks ago, we'd bring up more classic British comedy, in this case the 1950s radio Goon Show, and specifically the announcement for one of those programs that suddenly nothing happened. But it happened suddenly, mark you, end quote. In this case, what suddenly didn't happen was any reduction in human greenhouse gases. A new United Nations report, and this is from UNEP rather than the UNCCCP or some such entity, actually UNFCCC, and we hope someone got that Cyrillic Soviet Union joke, says that all that sound, fury, and money signified nothing. In response, scientific alarmism howled, quote, "The world is well on track to blow past a goal many countries have enshrined as the beating heart of global climate efforts, 1.5 degrees Celsius," end quote, beneath a graphic of a burning thermometer, earth on a stick thing of some sort. And the New York Times groaned, quote, "One year after world leaders made a landmark promise to move away from fossil fuels, countries have essentially made no progress in cutting emissions and tackling global warming, according to a United Nations report issued on Thursday," end quote. Landmark promise? The actual name of the UNEP report is No More Hot Air, Please, which might prompt groans of no more of that pun, please. But it does offer the sober reality that thus far what we've had is not landmarks, but ephemeral gusts of rhetoric. And just possibly there's a reason, like nobody knows how to do it because the science is wrong and so is the economics. The Times story groaned on, quote, "Global greenhouse gas emissions soared to a record 57 gigatons last year and are not on track to decline much, if at all, this decade," the report found. "Collectively, nations have been so slow to curtail their use of oil, gas, and coal that it now looks unlikely that countries will be able to limit global warming to the levels they agreed to under the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement," end quote. Now looks unlikely? When did it look likely? As we've said before, audiences are not well served by this kind of journalism, even when, as here, it is rather more blunt about the situation than it often is. And in the face of all this frenetic inactivity, UN Climate Change Executive Secretary Simon Steele, yes, lots of lucrative jet-setting jobs for the boys and girls here, including in his case with the UNFCCC, not UNEP, just said that COP29 in Azerbaijan in November, quote, "must be the stand and deliver COP," end quote. Which has a certain logic to it, although if he had any research staff, they might have warned him that stand and deliver was, quote, "said in the past by highwaymen when they stopped a carriage to demand objects of value from the travelers," end quote, until America's colorful hillbilly culture gave us reach for the sky instead. So, it's a threat, not outreach, albeit one he might not be very well placed to carry through on. Now, reach for the sky also has a very different meaning, which is to set ambitious goals, to aspire to excellence. And of course, when your goal is to change the composition of the atmosphere in order to make the weather better, it's literal as well. That is certainly an ambitious goal. But ambition is one thing, and delusion is quite another. So, as COP conferences gradually resign themselves to being unable to agree on any dramatic action to stop climate change, and the models quietly insisted that even dramatic action wouldn't accomplish anything worthy of a headline, the focus switched to making rich countries pay vast sums to poor countries to help them to mitigate the supposed impact of deteriorating weather using exactly the same sorts of policy approaches that had made them poor countries to begin with. So, the highway robbery image is somewhat appropriate, except that those same policy approaches also resulted in rich countries having most of the effective weapons as well. So, the basic notion is to say hands up while waving empty hands and pockets at someone who's got both money and guns. What could go wrong? Also in the newsletter, from the "Reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away" file, and that's a quotation from Philip K. Dick, there's yet more bad news from Hertz over its trendy bet on EVs. Quote, "Hertz struggles with $1 billion EV losses and delayed recovery," end quote. And yes, we told you so in a video, CDN being a reality-based outfit. Also, as the man said, you cannot make this stuff up. A lithium battery fire burns down a, wait for it, fire station in Hesse, Germany that did not, wait for it again, have a smoke alarm. They only announced that, quote, an emergency vehicle belonging to the fire department, which contained lithium-ion batteries and an external power connection, end quote, was to blame, apparently leaving open the possibility that it was, an ambulance? Yeah, rescue scooter? No, it was presumably a fire truck, though arguably their credibility was also consumed in the blaze. Speaking of which, a British school schedules, then bravely cancels in the face of outrage, a Blue Nose Day, in which children were going to shiver in unheated classrooms in the name of sustainability. And we get that pneumonia turns out not to be that big a boost to a healthy lifestyle. But here's the thing. The educational value of showing students what life would be like without reliable energy and rubbing their chilly, discolored noses in the fact that the problem is not global heating, but that it's miserably cold much of the time, would surely be worth braving a bit of controversy, wouldn't it? Ah, and as we flip through endless press releases of Canadian and other governments handing money to the next surefire green energy winner, crafted by people who never ran a corner store, it occurs to us that there's a certain genre of political announcement that specializes in glossing over difficulties and soothing the eye or the ear with vague promises of easy bliss to come. So when you read, for instance, this press release from the nominally conservative provincial government of Ontario, Canada, saying, quote, the government also announced it would release the province's first ever integrated energy plan with a generational horizon out to 2050, which will ensure the entire energy sector is aligned behind the government's pro-growth agenda to reduce costs and province-wide emissions, end quote, you actually hope that they're lying deliberately and with premeditation. Because the alternative is that they actually think all you need is will, or love, or them in power. But then you read a column by the New York Times marquee climate writer David Gellies that starts with a baffled quote, cleaning up the technology industry was supposed to be easy, end quote. And you realize that the fate of humankind is, to a disquieting degree, in the hands of people who think that practical difficulties are invented by the malicious to sabotage an outbreak of peace, plenty, and harmony. How was cleaning up anything, let alone an industry that requires a lot of weird mineral inputs, ever going to be easy? And speaking of practical difficulties, a story in Blacklock's Reporter brings the grim news that, quote, barely 1% of road vehicles in Canada are battery-powered electrics, Statistics Canada said yesterday, end quote. That's not very many, is it? And here you said we'd all be driving electrics by 2035 and be happy. Of course, that promise was made back when 2035 sounded as though it was a long way off. Unfortunately, objects in calendar are closer than they appear. Unless they're the actual achievement of green goals. Those things make mirages look close, cool, and thirst-quenching. Ah, and among the many frail reeds bundled together into the authoritative solution to climate change, one is to put a price on carbon so you can buy someone else's proclaimed lack of it to offset your continuing to spew the stuff. Which seems a bit like getting clean by not doing laundry while someone somewhere does so much of it that the whole planet is robed in shimmering green, at least rhetorically. Or paying someone else to forgo demon rum so you can keep sozzling. But as with many solutions to the supposedly apocalyptic, planet-shattering impact of person-made climate change, it appears insufficient in scope even if it were working smoothly instead of being an unconvincing kludge. Thus, when The Economist asks, quote, can the voluntary carbon market save the Amazon, unquote, surely the answer is a tart, no, of course not. But hope springs eternal, apparently. And we won't get distracted here by the parallel enthusiasm for carbon capture and storage, except to note that if that technology worked, we wouldn't have to pay people far away to do something we can't check on to offset our rampant emissions, because we'd be stuffing our own carbon into disused mines, into storage tanks, into trees, or something. But if we can't do it, in the most technologically advanced and wealthy societies that the globe has ever seen, it's a bit hard to believe that poor people in places with shaky government structures, including the rule of law and honest accounting, are pulling it off on a scale to suck in all of our carbon. Thus, a small but growing degree of skepticism by alarmists about, at least, the accounting of carbon offsets is progress of a sort. And speaking of progress, we just can't stop ourselves from discussing more and more cheerful data and putting it into charts, including this week when we cheerfully swap the C in CO2 for an S and show you SO2 or sulfur dioxide levels in the United States since 1980. This actual pollutant used to be a much bigger problem in urban air in North America and Europe, But improved technology allowed it to be scrubbed from smokestacks and automobile exhaust, essentially getting it out of the air before it ever got in the first place. And the following chart from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency shows not the average annual exposure in American urban air, but the 99th percentile, that is, the worst that people encountered, of each year's daily maximum readings from 29 locations around the country. In 1980, these spikes ranged from about 55 to 340 parts per billion ppb and averaged 173 ppb. But in 2023, they dropped to a range between about 3 and 14 ppb and an average of 9. Yes, that's right, a 95% reduction despite the enormous growth over that interval in economic activity and in energy consumption. Now here you might be thinking, hey, that's great, let's do it for carbon too, let's scrub that out of power plant exhaust. But the problem is that sulfur always was a contaminant that people would actually pay extra not to have in the oil or coal to begin with. Whereas carbon, alas, is central to the combustion process, so it's just not comparable. On that one, we're still waiting for the unicorn power. And speaking of unicorn power, it is hard to keep up with whatever the latest thing is in the wonderful world of alternative energy. I mean, let's see, wind is a bust, solar stinks, hydrogen is going nowhere, what's left? Oh yeah, electrification. Now that we've made it nearly impossible to build new power plants, let's demand that everyone plug everything into the electrical grid and draw lots more power from them. We'll switch away from gasoline and natural gas for our daily needs and try to run cars, appliances, and indoor heating with the electricity we don't have. Again, what could go wrong? Well, in this case, we don't need models of the distant future, or even common sense, to tell us. Because after a bit of arm-twisting by Robert Bryce, the U.S. Energy Information Administration put out numbers that show that, as of the present, using electricity for home heating costs 3.5 times more than natural gas. And that's before the electricity supply crisis hits. But if you think the concentrations of wind and solar are just peanuts, we have news for you about peanuts. Thanks to the CO2science.org archive, we find that multiple studies show that Arrakis hypogaea L, or the humble peanut, goes a lot better with more CO2. So, unless you have allergies to peanuts, be sure to spread some on your toast. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I do recommend listening to The Goon Show, but not living it.